Yaha. The same Jatabharta who was formerly Maharaj Bharta, the son of Maharaj Vishwadeva. Dushyajan. Very difficult to give up. Dharasutan. The wife and children. Or the most opulent family life. Surit. Friends and well-wishers. Rajam. A kingdom that extended. All over the world. Ridhishprishaha.
That which is situated
within the core of one's heart.
Jahao.
He gave up.
Yuva Eva.
Even as a young man.
Balavat.
Like stool.
Uttama Shloka Lala Saha.
He was so fond of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Uttama Shloka. So translation, while in the prime of life, the great Maharaja Bharata gave up everything because he was fond of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shloka. He gave up his beautiful wife, nice children, great friends, and an enormous empire. Although these things were very difficult to give up, Maharaj Bharata was so exalted that he gave them up just as one gives up stool after evacuating. Such was the greatness of his majesty. So going to repeat, while in the prime of life,
the great Maharaj Bharata
gave up everything. Because he was fond of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shloka.
He gave up his beautiful wife.
Nice children, great friends.
And an enormous empire.
Although these things were very difficult to give up.
Maharaj Bharata was so exalted
that he gave them up.
Just as one gives up stool
after evacuating.
Such was the greatness of his majesty.
So purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
The name of God is Krishna. Because he is so attractive that the pure devotee can give up everything within this material world on his behalf. Maharaj Bharata was an ideal king, instructor, and emperor of the world. He possessed all the opulences of the material world, but Krishna is so attractive that he attracted Maharaj Bharata from all his material possessions. Yet somehow or other, the king became affectionate to a little deer. And falling from his position, he had to accept the body of a deer in his next life. Due to Krishna's great mercy upon him, he could not forget his position and he could understand how he had fallen. Therefore, in the next life, as Jada Bharata, Maharaj Bharata was careful not to spoil his energy and therefore he presented himself as a deaf and dumb person. In this way, he could concentrate on his devotional service. We have to learn from the great King Bharata how to become cautious in cultivating Krishna consciousness. A little inattention will retard our devotional service for the time being. Yet any service rendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never lost. Swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato vayat. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, text 40. A little devotional service rendered sincerely is a permanent asset, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, fifth chapter, text 17. Chaktva sa dharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajan bhakpota patitato yate Yatrakva vadvadram abhura mukshikim kovarta hapto bhajatam sudharmataha. Somehow or other, if one is attracted to Krishna, whatever he does in devotional service is a permanent asset. Even if one falls down due to immaturity or bad association, his devotional assets are never lost. There are many other examples of this, Jamil, Maharaj Bharta, and many others. This Krishna consciousness movement is giving everyone a chance to engage in devotional service for at least some time. A little service will give one an impetus to advance and thus make one's life successful. In this verse, the Lord is described as Uttama Shloka. Uttama means the best and Shloka means reputation. Lord Krishna is full in six opulences, one of which is reputation. Aishvaryasya Samhagrasya Viryasya Yashasya Shriyaha. Krishna's reputation is still expanding. We are spreading the glories of Krishna by pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna's reputation, 5,000 years after the Battle of Kurukshetra, is still expanding throughout the world. Every important individual within this world must have heard of Krishna, especially at the present moment, due to the Krishna consciousness movement. Even people who do not like us and want to suppress the movement are also somehow or other chanting Hare Krishna. They say the Hare Krishna people should be chastised. Such foolish people do not realize the true value of this movement, but the mere fact that they want to criticize it gives them a chance to chant Hare Krishna, and this is its success. A very interesting statement by Prabhupada. So, Yodushya Jandara Sutan Suridrajam Vidish Vishaha Jaho Juhaiva Maravad Uttama Shloka Lala Saha. So, Omagana Tivadanda Shah Granjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurvay Namaha. So, this principle of renunciation has to be understood properly. It is not that Maharaj Bharata was thinking of his wife and children and his opulent family and friends and well-wishers like pieces of stool. Now, that's a misunderstanding that people have sometimes, that they look at or consider attractive features of this world to be disgusting or to be repulsive or to something to be negative about. I remember the early days of the movement, the brahmacharis would, when they would see the ladies, sometimes they would spit. They'd go, Maya Devis! So, Prabhupada describes this as the opposite side of the same coin, attraction, repulsion, or felt by conditioned souls. So, this means that they think they could enjoy something. See, that is the problem. They're looking at something and thinking that's enjoyable, and somehow or other, because they want to appear like great devotees or they want to maintain their status of renunciation, they get negative towards it. But that's not real renunciation. Or another story is when Prabhupada was talking about the story of Sakshi Gopal. And you all know the story of how the two brahmanas, they were in Vrindavan, and the older brahmana was served by the younger brahmana, and the younger brahmana got the promise that he could marry the older brahmana's daughter. And somehow or other, the older brahmana's family didn't appreciate it that much, so the younger brahmana had to have the deity walk all the way across India to witness the promise. So, Prabhupada told the story, and Prabhupada said they were both pure devotees, and one of our godbrothers, actually Panchavita Maharaj, said, Prabhupada, if he was such a pure devotee, why did he want to get married? I mean, why did he go to the temple? Why didn't he just say, I'm paraphrasing, of course. Why didn't he just say, hey, this is Krishna's arrangement, I'm not getting married? Prabhupada said to him, because no one would have you're saying that. Of course, he was speaking jokingly, and both devotees were speaking jokingly, and Prabhupada was speaking jokingly, and Panchadevita was joking, too. I mean, obviously, they knew the Siddhanta. So renunciation is not really a negative attitude towards the objects of the senses. In fact, the exact description of a devotee's renunciation is nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means he's neutral. He's not attracted or repulsed. So why do we see Maharaj Bharata giving up his opulent family life, wife, etc., 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 like one gives up stool? In other words, the attitude wasn't like stool. But why did he do it so enthusiastically like that? The reason is that he was so attracted to Krishna that the material enjoyment was insignificant in comparison. I mean, it was just something that was so overwhelmingly attractive. Just like Rupa Goswami says, if you at all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see, Krishna playing his flute on the Keshi Ghat. That's a sarcastic statement. Because if you go to see him or hear about him, then automatically these other things will appear to be insignificant. The material enjoyment will appear to be insignificant. And we find this in the lives of many, many great devotees, that as soon as they heard about Krishna or chanted his names or associated with the devotees, they developed this mood of renunciation. Not negativity, but renunciation, just attachment to Krishna. That's real renunciation. The one story comes to mind is a very interesting story from the Jaiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There was this personality, his name was Brajanath. What a wonderful name to have. Brajanath Das, of course. Nath means the Lord, and Braj means Vrindavan. So he's a servant of the Lord of Vrindavan. Wow, what a wonderful name. I only got a Kshatriya name. Vira Krishna means a servant of the Lord who's heroic in fights. Some people get Braj names. Anyway, I'm not envious. So his name was Brajanath. And he was actually interested in logic and reasoning, and real mental speculator, so to speak. And then also he's also interested in the Vedanta. So what happened is that he wanted to have a discussion about Vedanta and devotional service with this Babaji in Godram Dweepa. Godram Dweepa, of course, is the place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur has his ashram, the house. Anyone who's crossed the Jalangi River has probably visited this place. So he went to see this great devotee, Raghunath Das Babaji. Raghunath Das Babaji. Not Raghunath Goswami, but Raghunath Das Babaji. And he started to hear from him about Krishna. And it's interesting, in the Jiva Dharma, his questions and the answers given by Raghunath Das Babaji are practically a, as they say in French, I've used this word before, tour de force, a complete exposition of the Vaishnava philosophy, beginning with, the negation of Mayavadi philosophy, and then the Sambandha Videya Prayojana. Everything in Krishna consciousness is practically mentioned, and practically all the important verses that Prabhupada would quote and that our acharyas would quote to substantiate Lord Chaitanya's position as the propounder of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva philosophy, or negating impersonal philosophy or Mayavad philosophy, different varieties of Mayavad philosophy. It's an amazing book. I highly recommend this book for the Vaishnavas. Anyway, so getting to the point of renunciation. So he wasn't really renounced in the beginning. But he started to associate with this Raghunath Das Babaji. And so he got more and more of a taste for devotional service. And then basically one day his students came to study. And this is how he made his living. You know, it's not just that, you know, he was teaching as a side issue, but actually that's how he made his living. So the students came and he sent his students away because they were interested in logic and reason and some Vedanta. And he said, I've given up all my books. I've become a Vaishnava. Go away. That was one instance of his renunciation. I mean, it's interesting, just from association with this great Vaishnava and hearing from this great Vaishnava. And then his grandmother got into the act. And his grandmother had been approached by one of these matchmakers, because in the Indian villages you have matchmakers. Oh my God. Cracks the heart, like Prabhupada said. In the Indian villages you have these matchmakers. Matchmaker means not that they're matching in chess games or something like that. They're matching men and women to get them married. So his grandmother had been approached, and they had this fantastic lady for him to marry. And his grandmother started to nag him every day. And you know, he was this, you know, because he was so much attached to Krishna consciousness, I don't want to get into this other thing. Then one day, his cousin came. His cousin came, and his cousin was quite demoniac by mentality. His cousin came. And his cousin went, spoke to the grandmother, and grandmother said, I have this problem, you know, your cousin is not really cooperating. You know, I'm really worried about him. His mother's worried about him. His whole family's worried about him. We got to get him married. And so this cousin, his name was Vani Madhava, if I remember correctly. Cousin said, all right, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So he started to talk to Brajanath to try to convince him. And then he saw Brajanath was not going to be convinced. So then he thought, let me make a whole plan to destroy his relationship with the Vaishnavas. Because usually if someone can't be convinced about something with sweet words, then one of the other political expedients is called divide and conquer. It's beta. Beta means to divide. Or difference. Just like we have a chincha beta beta tattva philosophy. That means one and not different. Different and non-different simultaneously. So beta means to make a difference. So what happened is that he went to Raghunath Das Babaji, who was the mentor, spiritual master of Brajanath, and he said, that Brajanath is speaking really nasty about you. You know, this is how you do divide and conquer if you want to practice it. So he said, Brajanath is speaking very nastily about you. And of course, Raghunath Das Babaji, he could see, as they say, the face is the index of a man's mind. You can actually see, you know, so whether someone is demoniac or not demoniac, just by seeing the facial expressions. I mean, just like I was hearing about the Ramayana and Kumbhakarna's facial expressions. Not exactly godly. So anyway, so you can actually tell that by looking. It doesn't take much expertise. It just takes a little bit of insight to understand that. So this Raghunath Das Babaji, he understood this guy's an agent of Kali. You know, he's come to destroy it. So then there's Vani Madhava. He went back to Brajanath, and he said to Brajanath, basically, that your so-called guru is laughing at you and he's not appreciating it. And Brajanath understood what was happening too. So he went to his guru, and the guru basically said that this agent of Kali was there. And so then it didn't hurt the relationship at all at that particular juncture. So then Brajanala went back to his grandmother and said, Grandma, if you want to see me around, don't talk about marriage anymore. And don't let that creep come here anymore. Let Vani Madhava come anymore. So Vani Madhava was more or less banned. But he became really angry because he really was an agent of Kali. So he became so angry that he thought, I'm going to teach my cousin a lesson. I'm going to have him beaten up. So he went to some of his friends and he said, look, when my cousin is walking to see his guru, we're going to beat him up. Okay. So this word got back to Brajanath that his cousin had planned to beat him up. So what he did is he went to one of his tenants. He had some property, and one of his tenants was an expert stick fighter, like that. And he said to his tenant, you know, what's happening? The tenant said, look, as long as I'm around, nobody's going to bother with you. So when you go to see your guru, take me with you. So, but still he was scared, so he didn't go that much to see his guru. We went once in a while, and he took the stick fighter with him, so he was protected. And he was feeling very sad that he couldn't see his guru that much. And then about a week later, he got news that Vani Madhava had been bitten by a snake. And the guru, of course, wasn't like completely ecstatic. Haribol, you know, what is that? Hey ho, the witch is dead, the wicked witch is dead, or something like that. Like from the Wizard of Oz. He said, felt sad for the conditioned soul who had actually deviated from Dharma. So, and then Brajanath continued associating with the spiritual master. Later on, there's a whole story that Brajanath realized his eternal spiritual identity. He was actually brought up from, first of all, being a logician, and then into Vedanta, and then not really understanding Krishna consciousness, but all the way to the topmost platform by the association with his guru, of understanding his spiritual identity and actually realizing his spiritual identity. It's pretty interesting by the association of the guru. Of course, this is not to say that marriage is maya. This is not the point, because actually even Brajanath asked his guru, you know, who is more exalted, a sannyasi or a householder, and his guru said, the point is that someone who's actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness is most exalted. So we don't consider the ashram. So that's not really the point. But the point of the story is that when one hears about Krishna, one naturally wants to make his life simpler. That's really the point. And to simplify things, because Prabhupada said, simple living, high thinking is our philosophy. And in fact, that's why Prabhupada wanted farm communities to teach that particular lesson. Simple living, high thinking. Unfortunately, many of us, including myself, are into simple thinking and high living. You understand? Exactly the opposite. We make our lives more complicated through modern technology and other means like that. But Prabhupada actually wanted that. So really, that's what a devotee really wants, to simplify. That's why you see the Babaji's. They're dressing in a very, what we call a niggardly fashion. That means a very, not only simple fashion, but they're, you know, torn clothes and everything like that. And even Raghunath Das Goswami had to give up his cloth that he had received from his brother-in-law Srikant and dressed him like in a quilt. Because life is so simple then. I mean, if you just have a few gumshoes, if you don't have to get a washing machine to wash all the gumshoes, if you just wash them in the river. It's like that story Prabhupada told about the Brahmin in his underwear. And I think you all know that story. But then, yeah, anyway, the Brahmin somehow or other, because he didn't want to live simply, eventually he got so entangled in this material world. First of all, he had to get a cat to get rid of the rat. And then he had to get a cow to feed the cat. Then he had to get a wife to feed the cow or take care of the cow. And then finally he had to get a job to feed the wife. So, because he didn't want to keep things simple. So, the idea is to keep things simple. Not to accept more than necessary for keeping the body and soul together. So that's the first point here. The Maharaj Bharat left because he just wanted to devote all of his life to hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's the point. not because he had a negative attitude towards any of these things he gave up. So then the second point of this verse and purport is, why did Maharaj Bharat fall down? It's a very interesting point, because Maharaj Bharat was on the platform of Bhava Bhakti. You know, there's three platforms of bhakti. One is the sadhana, the next one's bhava, and the next one's prema. Of course, each one of those is broken down into different categories. Like in sadhana, you have vaidhi and then raganuga, you know, rules and regulations, and then spontaneous. But he was on the platform of bhava. Bhava means he was experiencing so much emotions, it was actually incredible. That's described previously. Vyabhachari bhava, I'm not going to get into description because we don't have a lot of time for class. But he was experiencing all these emotions. So why did he fall down? I mean, why did he develop anarthas? Let's talk about that. Because in bhava, when you're at the platform of bhava, you don't have any anarthas. But you're not absolutely free from them, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. If you're not attentive, they can creep back. So what is the source of anarthas, first of all? According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, anarthas can come from impious activities, obviously, you know, if you start eating meat, or even pious activities, or offenses, or from bhakti itself. You know, the byproducts of bhakti. Like we were describing the other day, how weeds can sometimes grow, the weeds of profit, adoration, and distinction. But in the case of Bharat Maharaj, it was actually like a pious activity. It's really interesting. Because this poor little baby deer was born because the mother died. And he felt he had to take care of this baby deer. I mean, it's a pious activity to take care of a helpless creature, isn't it? So he fell down because he got anarthas because he executed a pious activity. He didn't commit offenses. And, you know, the byproducts of bhakti wasn't, you know, that really didn't cause him to fall down because there weren't too many people worshiping him in the forest. And he didn't do anything vikarmic. So he did something pious. So this is actually a discussion we have now in ISKCON. About charitable activities. You understand? Like, if someone engages in mundane charity, is that a deviation from Krishna consciousness? And of course, mundane charity is a deviation from Krishna consciousness. At the same time, it's a fine line. Sometimes someone can engage in charity and give people prasadam, or engage in charity giving things to the people in the holy dham. I mean, it's really a fine line. Like we're talking about this about food for life, for example, in Vrindavan. Sometimes people say it's mundane, but actually you're serving the residents of Vrindavan, right? The Brajavasis. So that's not really mundane. However, you know, if I began to serve a deer, a baby deer, or had a pet chinchilla, and I just visited someone who had a pet chinchilla at home, they're quite cute. My grandfather used to make coats out of them. That's horrible. So that's like mundane. You understand? Or if you just like engage, let's say I join the PETA, you know, people for the ethical treatment of animals, and just like go out and picket for vegetarianism. Like Prabhupada actually told us not to do that. Because that's mundane. However, if you do vegetarianism and you give them prasadam at the same time, then it's spiritual. So it's really difficult sometimes to ascertain or understand what is a mundane activity, a pious activity, and what is actually conscious. I mean, it takes a lot of intelligence. Like the devotees in India are distributing millions of plates of prasadam every day. They have this midday meal program in Delhi, in Bombay, and other places, and also New Jain. And sometimes devotees of the movement criticize it being mundane. But for two reasons, it's not mundane. First of all, this prasadam, they're offering it to Krishna. Secondly, it's helping to establish our movement as a movement to be respected in India. It's a strategic ploy or strategy so that our movement will be accepted more and more and people will come. Sometimes you got to package things like that. You know, we're talking about packaging or marketing Krishna consciousness. Sometimes you have to package it in a certain way. Like Prabhupada said, when you distribute a book, you can say, oh, this is a history book. So that's packaging. I mean, obviously, it is a history book. We're not lying. But it goes far beyond being simply a history book. So the point is, it's really, really a fine point. What is a pious activity and what is just Krishna conscious? You know, so one has to have a lot of intelligence and one also has to have the association of devotees. That's another point. That Bharat Maharaj didn't have the association of devotees, so he became confused and no one was there to correct him. Like Prabhupada said, sticks, when a stick is by itself, it can be broken. When sticks are together, they can't be broken. And had any of us or other Vaishnavas been there to correct him, he would have been corrected. Okay. So that's one aspect of anarthas. Another interesting thing about anarthas, not that I'm so interested in anarthas, but, you know, we're subject to them, so we should be aware of them, is that there are different manifestations of anarthas too. Not just where do they come from, but different manifestations. This is also described by Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and many of the other acharyas. The first manifestation of anarthas is identification with the body. You know, the false identification with the material world and the body. And the second one is greed. That's another manifestation of anartha. You know, greed for something like kama, krodha, like that. Lust, anger, greed, etc. The third manifestation of anartha, so you can see if someone has anartha, is offenses. This is a manifestation of anartha. Not only do offenses cause anarthas, but they're in a manifestation of anartha. So it's a vicious circle. If you commit offenses because you're have anarthas, then you'll get more anarthas. But the final one is actually related to Jata Bharata. It's called Vridya Dorabalyam, which means like a weakness in the heart. Let me translate that to what I mean. It's sentimentality. Sentimentality. That one becomes sentimental about something in this world due to, let's say, the baby deer that Bharat Maharaj became sentimental about. That was the type of anartha that he manifested, or the quality of the anartha that he manifested. He became very sentimental towards this. Oh, this baby deer. Oh, it's so cute. Oh, it's so adorable. I mean, had it been a spider, he wouldn't have felt like that, I don't think. I mean, not many people adopt spiders and start kissing them, do they? Because the kiss of the spider can be the kiss of death sometimes. But or cockroach. So that's the sentimentality. So when we get sentimental about things, oh, how cute it is, or we get sentimental about family members who are not Krishna conscious and we just spend time, too much time, dealing with them that has nothing to do with Krishna, that's called Vridya Durbalyam. It means a weakness in the heart. So we have to be very, very careful when we see the signs of these anarthas coming up, to pull ourselves back. That's called the intelligence platform. So anyway, see, that's all we have time for. So any questions or comments about any of these points? We have about 10 seconds left to class. No? Anyway, not much time. So it's interesting, the analysis here about Jata Bharata, his anarthas, and, you know, his attachment when he was Bharat Maharaj to Krishna Katha, that he gave up everything without looking back. That's really the point. Not with a negative attitude, but he just didn't look back. God, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.